Hi and welcome to Fantasy Focus Baseball. It's a beautiful Monday morning, June 15th, 2020. He is Tristan H. Cockcroft, singer of songs, slayer of myriad fantasy leagues, the H now standing for hippie because his hair is so long. He is also Kyle Soppy, expert researcher and producer, and I'm merely Eric Carabel. Somebody had a host and they chose me on today's show. Much jocularity, I am sure, even as there is little funny going on in the state of baseball right now. But let's bring in our good pal, Dave Schoenfield, the awesome ESPN senior writer, to talk about Sunday night's long gone summer 30 for 30 doc and other things in baseball. He knows as much as we do. Dave, hello. How are you today?
I'm good. I've moved up into second place in my fantasy cornhole league, so I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, I resisted playing in that one, but I'm sure you're doing well. When I think cornhole, I think Dave Schoenfield. The 30 for 30 doc, which I'm just calling the Mark McGwire doc, because it was really about him and a little bit about Sosa and none about Ken Griffey Jr., who I wanted to see interviewed. But I thought it was very well done. I love the highlights. Right when the show started, I tweeted out, time to watch the Steve Traxel documentary. And I thought he did well in the doc because he gave up the famous home run. But yeah. You wrote an excellent recap for ESPN as soon as the documentary ended, and I hope you could just kind of sum it up for us. We want everybody to check it out, but sum up your real feelings on the show.
Yeah, so I've seen it twice now, and watching it live last night, I enjoyed it much more than when I watched an earlier version on my laptop. Yeah, we could have used a little more Sammy Sosa, especially since, as we see in the film, he's the more charismatic individual of the two. And in essence, you know, he really made that home run race, making it a two-person race instead of just McGwire versus Maris. But, you know, the steroid stuff comes up at the end. But for the most part, it's just a nostalgic trip back to the summer of 1998 when that home run chase ruled the baseball world. I wrote this today. You can make an argument. Other than when the Red Sox won in 04 and when the Cubs won in 2016, that was sort of the last time baseball was unarguably the king of the sports world, at least for that summer.
Right, and we'll get to where baseball stands now and in the next couple of years a little bit later in the show when it's not as much fun. Tristan, you know, we know that that Kyle, the producer, loves the 98 season, and nothing that could have happened that doc would have changed that. And it is fun to look back at that season and the home runs that were hit. When that was happening, the 1998 season, we were all adults. We loved it. We loved the home runs. We weren't thinking about Andro or any steroids. And Tristan, these were moonshots. Like, other than the record breaker that he hit off Traxel, McGwire was hitting these baseballs 600 feet.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So onto the, you know, street in Wrigley, over Wrigley Field. I mean, what an amazing season that was, Tristan. Just to remember, and remembering it from the documentary, like, I do remember it finally, originally.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I've mentioned a lot of my great fantasy baseball memories from leagues come from 98 because there were so many other tales even beyond just McGwire and Sosa. And I remember I loved it. You know, my first year as a writer, actually, in this industry. So I was actually writing about players like this, and I don't know, I enjoyed it despite the cloud that was looming down the road. McGwire, though, for me, the one big story was going to the vet I think it was 99, not 98, and watching McGwire hit one of those home runs live. He rocketed a ball that hit the facade of the upper deck and came all the way back down on the field. And I remember thinking, I've never seen anybody hit a baseball, you know, anywhere near that hard. And there was something very unusual about it. I think that was the moment where it really struck me. Hey.
Maybe I was at that game. Did you have to take a stub?
I think it was one of the Fanatics birthdays. I went to a couple of the Fanatics birthday.
He has like eight a year. Dave.
I said one of, see?
I know. It's amazing. It's like it's always his birthday. Dave, as a Seattle Mariners fan, did you want to see Griffey in this? And look, because I think the summer is not just about, as Tristan noted, it's not just about McGwire and Sosa. There were amazing things that happened that summer. The Kerry Wood game, the Cubs. How did Sosa win the MVP over McGwire? I'm trying to think about how. I guess because Sosa's team made the playoffs and McGwire's didn't. But, I mean, I want to see a little bit of Griffey there and because he's very articulate, like what he thought about the race. And as a Mariners fan, I'm guessing you would have as well.
Yeah, look, I know it's, you know, 2 hours. You can only fit so much into it. But Griffey got shortchanged a little bit. I don't know if he, you know, declined to be interviewed for the piece. But, yeah, remember at the start of the season, it was McGuire versus Griffey. And then Sosa has a great line, you know, in the doc about that, about, you know, I forget the specific thing he said. But, yeah, it was supposed to be McGuire. So if McGuire and Griffey, and then, but God wanted me to be part of it, whatever he said. But yeah, at the All-Star break, it was McGuire with 37, Griffey with 35, Sosa with 33. So Griffey was there until the middle of July, and then he slumped. But yeah, I would have loved to have heard his perspective on it.
And I wonder, having an American League player doing it would have been interesting as well. Probably would have been more interesting for like a Texas Rangers fan going through that, because it was all National League at the time, although there was some amazing stuff happening in both leagues. Yankees season obviously was amazing. And so watching the doc, at every commercial, I'm going on Baseball Reference and looking up, oh, was I at the game where McGuire at the trade deadline was dealt the year before, and I was looking that up because his first game was at the Vet in Philly. And then I was trying to figure out, I guess Sosa won MVP. Now, you know, a lot of the voting in these things is ridiculous in history, but Sosa has an MVP award on his record that McGuire really should have won, right?
Yeah, you know, I think you nailed it. At that time, especially, the emphasis was you had to make the playoffs. And remember, the Cubs had been terrible in 97. So they go, they, you know, beat the Giants in the tiebreaker game to win the wild card. So he got a lot of extra credit. I don't think he was unanimous, but he got like all but two first
yeah, all but two
votes. I think if they had that kind of season today, McGuire would probably win the MVP vote.
Right.
A lot of retroactive changes to that.
Yes.
Good. Half of the MVP and Cy Youngs would have changed, right, over history, Tristan, not just because of wins above replacement, but because of, you know, common sense.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing about that particular MVP race is what gets forgotten. It was just before we got to the Moneyball book and everything. McGuire had 162 walks that year.
Yeah.
To Sosa's 73. I had forgotten that. If you had told me what was the difference in the number of walks between the two of them, I would not have guessed it was nearly 100. That's pretty remarkable in itself.
Right. And I was trying to figure out how the Cardinals weren't contenders. Like, the Cubs were. They had Breyer and Wood. But if McGuire had basically the same season as Sosa, like, what else was wrong with the Cardinals? I guess it was pitching. They lost Tudor for a while. Well, maybe that was a different season. I was watching Game 7 of the Twins Cardinals World Series. Dave, pull up the lineup the Cardinals used in Game 7. That was the Tudor season when he got hurt and Joe McGrane got called up. I want you to see how bad, with Tom Lawless at third base. They didn't have Jack Clark or Terry Pendleton in that World Series. Jose Oquendo is playing right field. Like, that's like a spring training lineup for Game 7.
Yeah, I remember, Jack Clark was their only home run hitter, and he was hurt. You know, that was a makeshift lineup. Another old game, this is going way off course, but I'm going to bring it up because this irritated me to no end. So I'm watching Game 7 of 1952 yesterday, Yankees and Brooklyn Dodgers. And Brooklyn's leadoff hitter was a guy named Billy Cox, who's a very good defensive third baseman. He was the worst hitter on the team by OPS that year. He's hitting first. Pee Wee Reese is hitting second, who was a good hitter, but he's like their seventh best OPS guy. Yankees win 4-2. Guess who made the last two outs of the game in the ninth inning? Billy Cox and Pee Wee Reese, leaving Duke Snider and Jackie Robinson and Roy Campanella on deck. It's like your point you've been making all year.
Well, you're saying 1952. This is still happening in 2002, where little shortstops with no power and no on base skills. I mean, we're not just talking Omar Moreno types that didn't get on base. We're talking about like even like 20 years ago, teams are batting their worst hitter second so he can bunt. But, you know, and there was no bunting in this documentary. Overall, I think it's a good documentary and I enjoyed it and I would watch it again. And we should note the people that have not seen it yet. Not naming names, but it is being replayed on Monday night at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN and at other times during the week. And we do recommend it. You know, we're talking about – it's not really focusing on steroids until the Bob Costas – you know, Bob Costas is the speaker of the steroid era for media. he comes on in the last 15 minutes, but it really is enjoyable. And I like the interviews. I thought McGuire actually did well. You said Sosa did better. I thought McGuire actually did. I mean, 90% of the interviews were him. I love the Steve Traxel interview. I really do. That was great. And then when McGuire hits the winning home, the home run off Traxel, they stopped the game for like a half an hour. He's not just hugging Roger Maris's family. He's hugging every fan. It's kind of crazy, but we all loved it. That's amazing.
Yeah, you know, that's the best thing you see in that movie is how everyone cared. I mean, I was talking to my wife, and she enjoyed it. She's a very casual baseball fan, but she mentioned her mom, who could care less about sports, was following it that summer. I mean, everybody was following this home run race. It was a true pop culture moment. It went beyond just baseball.
And, you know, maybe that's part of the problem, Tristan, is that baseball was still beloved in 1998. It came back to be beloved after the strike. We grew up in the 80s and loved it then. Baseball's not as beloved right now. So something else is going to have to happen in the next couple of seasons. And maybe it's like Luis Arraez hitting 420 in September or something and going after 400, or Pete Alonso going after 70 home runs or something like that. But that's kind of the thing. Like, my wife's like, why doesn't this happen now? I'm like, well, baseball was different then. It's not just because we were younger. It's just everybody loved baseball, and then they kind of changed off of that, like, a little bit, right? You know, it's like that saddens me a little bit as a baseball fan. So
yeah. It's been a little bit of a rocky time between the 1994 strike and now, and it could be so for a little while longer, apparently.
They're their own worst enemy.
I would agree. Baseball could really use, even in a shortened season, somebody going for a quest, let's say challenging Bob Gibson's ERA number, even though it's in a shortened year and we talked about the theoretical asterisk, it could also use a guy going for a 400 batting average. We need some sort of statistical goal just to get people re-energized again. I mean, that's what people are into in baseball, the numbers.
They'll come back, Dave. I think there's – no matter what happens – well – no matter what is a large statement, but there's going to be around a 50-game season. I think we all agree that's going to happen. And obviously there's going to be some people unhappy and ignoring it, protesting it, whatever. There's a lot of other more important stuff going on in this country. But the point is, baseball fans will come back. They may not come back this August, but they'll come back next year, 3 years, something like that. This stuff is all cyclical, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, baseball's gone through a lot of ups and downs, and people, you know, they act like baseball, the national pastime, was always the most popular sport. Well, look at attendance, you know, starting in the 50s and through the 60s, it really struggled, you know, that, you know, TV came, you know, into full force in the 50s, and that kept people at home. You know, so then you had the first wave of new stadiums in the 70s, and that kind of helped bring baseball back a little bit. Baseball attendance actually peaked right before the 94 strike. We've never gotten back to the attendance levels of 1993 and 1994. Yet, you know, the money in the game, the issue right now, has never been bigger. It's a $10 billion industry, but no doubt baseball has to figure out how to bring the younger fan into the game, how to get younger kids playing the game. And that's why the issue that's going on now is so frustrating, because we're talking about off the field stuff rather than the sport.
Yeah, that's a shame. And one final thing that from last night is I'm watching the documentary. My wife's just reading her Kindle. She doesn't even know what's on the TV. And like, I'm like whispering when I see, oh, there's Dustin Hermanson. Oh, there's Traxel. Oh, there's like there's like Mark Langston. I'm like just like naming pitchers who are giving up these home runs. I'm not even sure Langston was one of them. But I, you know what I mean? That was like one of the things that I was doing. Yeah, he was still pitching. So, yeah.
And then, like, 98 in the World Series. Believe me, I know from the replays.
That's right. He was in the 98. Oh. He was in relief in that World Series.
He wasn't on the Mariners, Dave. Come on.
He was one of my favorite players. I was so happy. He finally gets to a World Series. I think it was the last year of his career. That might have been the last pitch he ever threw, and he got robbed by Richie Garcia. That was strike three.
I diehard Yankee fan, yes, but that was a terrible call. I give you that. First of all, by the way, the game outcome still might have gone the way it did anyway, yeah. But that was a terrible call.
I have a question for you, Tristan. You kind of alluded to this earlier. Is there any, have you ever done a ranking of like, this was the best fantasy season ever? Like 98 yeah. or 01, like A-Rod went 40-40, had all these great pitchers.
Has he done it?
Well, any individual season.
Yeah, I don't know how you can even rank it. But
that's a tough one. Yeah. Oh, I like that. I'm going to have to look into that now. Yeah. No, we haven't done one in terms of like 1998 was the greatest fantasy season. We haven't done that because the tough part is fantasy is comparing everybody to the league average. So we'd right. have to have interesting storylines for fantasy. Yeah. You know, I'll have to look into that.
But Tristan, McGuire and Sosa's season were not the most valuable for fantasy in 98, right?
I believe not.
You probably yeah. have a player rater like memorized from that year. So
I actually think that Sosa was one. A-Rod
was ahead of McGuire because of the stolen bases. Sosa had 18 stolen bases, so he was probably more valuable than McGuire. But they were both in the top five. You mentioned it last week.
You mentioned
so we don't
the top 10. Yeah, I'm pretty sure Sosa was one, but let me confirm.
Dave, let me ask you this because you're not going to be on Thursday's show with June Lee. We do movies every Thursday, but I know you have thoughts on the awesome movie Moneyball, which we'll be talking about on Thursday. June rates it as his favorite movie, baseball movie, but he's a little biased. He's a lot younger than we are, half our age. So I'm curious your thoughts on Moneyball and its place in baseball, because a lot of people give credit to the book as changing baseball, when in reality, I don't think that's really true.
Well, I would disagree a little bit with you. I think that book had a major impact.
The book was not about what most people think it's about.
Well, no, it's not about Billy. You know, Billy Beane's the main character, so to speak. But no, I think it was an important book in the eventual shift to more analytics in baseball.
I think that people look at it a little bit differently. Like undervalued assets is what I think it's really about, and people look at it as Oakland being like this innovative team. They didn't have any money to spend, so I think it's fair and unfair to characterize them as like the poster their team of that era when they didn't make a World Series,
right?
And they were just trying to find hidden cheap talent. And also, the movie has some flaws. Art Howe is really a good guy, by the way.
Yeah,
he doesn't say that. But we'll talk about that. I just wanted to get your thoughts.
I think the movie's great. Yeah, I know when you guys discuss the movies, one of your criteria is like, you know, how realistic was it? Yeah, and they basically dismissed Tim Hudson and Barry Zito and Mark Mulder. Oh, yeah, those guys were a pretty important part of that run, and they make Scott Hatterberg like Babe Ruth. But, you know,
yeah.
As a movie – you know, again, we always have to separate us being diehard baseball fans from, you know, a more casual viewer. I think to a casual viewer, to take that concept and make it a watchable movie was a pretty remarkable achievement.
Yeah, that's fair, Tristan. It is a very watchable movie. I enjoy it whenever I see it on, even if it's with commercials on TBS or something. I will watch it. And I do like that most of it is pretty accurate. I mean, that was Hatterberg's swing that's a famous actor who played that role. He became much bigger after that.
Peter Quill, come on. No, it's Chris Pratt.
Chris Pratt, he was on Parks and Rec. And so it is a good movie. It holds up over these years. So we'll talk about more of that on Thursday. Another thing that happened last week, Dave, that we want to recap with you, the draft. Your thoughts on how the draft went overall. Obviously, there's a lot of negative here. Only 5 rounds instead of 40. There's no Mike Piazzas unless they're signing for $20,000. But overall, I really enjoyed the draft. And I wrote about it a few times. And I know you wrote about it and you followed it closely. This is probably the draft I followed the closest and ever for baseball. What about you?
Yeah, no, I studied quite a bit. I think the most interesting thing was the Tigers announcing Spencer Torkelson as a third baseman. So I phoned in. They had a phone call or a Zoom call with their scouting director and Spencer and Alan Trammell. And the Tigers are convinced he can play third base. You know, I don't think this is just smoke and guns. I think they really believe he's athletic enough to try him there. It's a little odd, a college first baseman moving to third base. I did a little research. Tim Wallach was a college first baseman, became a gold glove third baseman. So it's happened before, at least once. But obviously that would, you know, affect his fantasy value. He's a third baseman, so they're going to give it a shot.
And Tristan, I'll ask you, does it really affect? But I'll say this, Pat, just because Pat Burrell and Ryan Braun couldn't play third base in the majors does not mean to me that Spencer Torkelson cannot. So Tristan, Dave just alluded to, would it affect his fantasy value? And I would argue that third base might be deeper now than first base for fantasy purposes. Having multi-eligibility would be nice, but we're not going to know that for like 2 or 3 years. So, and I, in your dynasty rankings, which were posted today on Monday, June 15th, you've got Torkelson in your top 300, but you have him at number, and this is not a criticism, I can't do these rankings nearly as well as you. You have Andrew Vaughn, number 121, and Torkelson at number 277. And I assume that's because Vaughn is a year ahead. But that seems like an awfully large divide to me for two very similar first base types. Call it what it is. Power. They're not winning batting titles. Why such a big difference between Vaughn, last year's prize corner guy, and Torkelson this one? And also, is there a difference between being eligible at third and first?
Well, okay, let's discuss the divide first. I struggled with that one. I actually was going to put them very close together. And the year's advance that Vaughn has on Torkelson is a pretty big deal, especially when we consider not knowing how minor league development is going to work over the next year or so. To me, that was a pretty big deal. I mean, he could effectively lose a year and a half to 2 years compared to what Vaughn has done. The other thing, too, is I like Chicago as a power ballpark. So there's a slight edge there in terms of the year-over-year development. But I could just as easily, like you're describing, make the case the two of them belong right there next to each other. As to the third versus first base, I agree with you. Third base is a very deep position, especially keeper-wise, prospect-wise. There are a couple guys there. Vlad Guerrero obviously comes to mind immediately, who could move off third base, and that might thin out the pool a little bit. But first base is not a very deep position for fantasy. The reason that third base is interesting for me for Torkelson is just that it gives him another spot in which to play. I prefer the flexibility, the options to either settle at one of those two spots as opposed to just being locked into first base is appealing to me because, hey, you know, maybe the next thing they try is the outfield. I like the creativity. I like the flexibility, and it gives me a little bit more optimism for him career-wise.
Dave, knowing that Major League Baseball is shelving a bunch of minor league places and maybe leagues, and it's going to be a lot fewer minor leaguers next year, would that affect you as a fantasy manager and how you view the progress of some of these players? I mean, I'm not talking about Mackenzie Gore or Dylan Carlson. They're ready right now, and hopefully they'll debut this season in the 50-game season. But in future years, maybe it takes Torkelson longer than it would have before.
I was actually kind of thinking about this morning. I don't know why, because I always think, I guess me, you, and Tristan, we're always thinking about baseball in some regard. But I actually wonder if it will not lead to quicker development for prospects, because in essence, they're not wasting at bats against non-prospects. They're only facing really good pitchers. So you might get a quicker read on who's really, you know, going to be moving quicker to the majors. So like these kids get drafted out of college and they spend that first summer in like short season A ball, which doesn't tell us anything, yeah. You know? So now we'll be playing more, you know, low A or a high A, better competition. I think it's actually going to be good for player development and we'll separate players a little quicker than in the past.
And Tristan, if we think that things are going to get even uglier between the owners and the Players Association, and there's not going to be any middle class of players, you're still going to have your Bryce Harpers and Rendones making $1 trillion, and then a lot of players making like the minimum salary, I think this could be good for prospects being promoted to the major leagues quicker. If it's not going to be a middle class, then why wouldn't the Tigers promote Torkelson like mid-next season? He's not going to be making a ton of money. So I feel like from fantasy aspect, the middle class is going to be going away soon. They're not going to be getting the contracts that they want. I feel bad for JT Realmuto, but I'm sorry. You're not going to get what you thought you were going to get 6 months ago. But this could be good for prospects in a way.
It could be, yeah. And to Dave's point, I think I thought about that. Is this a good opportunity for younger players and prospects. I think there's a good chance of that. I think baseball is going to see a lot of change overall over the next, I mean, obviously over the next 2 years, but especially as it pertains to prospects. Is that going to change in the CBA? That's going to have an impact on players like this. As you said, if there is no middle class, that's going to bump up some of these guys. I feel like right now is one of the toughest times to rank dynasty or keeper players. And for me, I'm wondering whether the fall update, especially if we do get a season in, is going to see the largest amount of change in the rankings that I've ever had from one ranking set to the next. I could see a situation by which prospects are moving up 100 to 150 spots just because the opportunities open up a little bit more.
It's going to be a free-for-all, Dave. I mean, obviously, we'll have you on and probably next Monday, if you're okay with it, to talk about what happens. I think it's going to happen this week. But, like, why wouldn't the Padres promote Gore right away? He's one of their top five starting pitchers right now. Every team except maybe even Detroit, Baltimore, Miami. Why can't these teams contend in a shortened season? There's not going to be an asterisk. Maybe there won't be – there's not going to be fans in the stands, but – I'll be watching these games on television. I bet you will too. So what changes in a shortened season, really?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think these, especially the top pitching prospects, do you really want them spending an entire baseball season not facing a high caliber level of competition and playing games on the backfields or whatever they would do if they're not on that major league roster? That's not going to be good for their development, even if it's just 20 or 30 innings, you know, in this shortened season. I think it's worth it. You know, I know we've talked about it before, but I think you're going to see the Gores and Spencer Howard and Nate Pearson hitters. I'm not quite as convinced. You know, I don't think we're going to see Wander Franco, but I think we're going to see a lot of those young pitchers for sure.
And how do we feel about the baseball? One would assume that because baseball is getting so much bad press right now, that they would want to have a ton of home runs, right? I mean, like, I don't have any actual insight here other than one would think that the commissioner would want a season like last year with a billion home runs because it helps people to get interested, right, Tristan? I mean, isn't that what – that was fun last year. Now, purists like us three may not have enjoyed a million home runs. Like in one of my Sims, Aaron Nola has already given up 30 home runs and it's the All-Star break. But the point is, why wouldn't – I'm thinking now we're going to have that home run baseball back.
Yeah, I could see that. I've wondered this myself, and it's why I said I think a lot of change is coming in the game, especially for fantasy, is that they're going to need to do something. Think about it this way. We talk about goals for players. So, you know, 50, well, 60 home runs if you talk about 98, but 50 home runs is kind of like that golden number now. What's it going to be in a 50 game season? 20 would be difficult to get to. They're going to need somebody to get there, somebody to get excited with some sort of numerical goal as opposed to the league leader in home runs is 14. I could see it.
I was texting with a coworker of ours who shall remain nameless, but he joked about just waiting until the Super Bowl in 2022. Unfortunately, I think he was alluding to a potential work stoppage in 2021. But after watching that doc, though, boy, the ball was pretty juiced in 1998 as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, those home runs, and it wasn't just those guys, by the way. Like, yeah. Everybody was hitting home runs. It wasn't like the Dale Swain, Wade Boggs season. What was that, 87?
In 87, the rabbit ball. Larry Sheets, I remember, was off to an incredible
go run. To YouTube, listeners, and type in Glenn Allen Hill home run. There's this home run. I think it's at Wrigley when he's with the Cubs. That ball must have gone 700 feet. It's an unbelievable home run.
That's a better Glenn Allen Hill story than the one about the fear of spiders.
Yeah.
He got hit by a spider and went on the DL, didn't he?
He did, yes. He fell in. I think he fell through a glass
table.
Coffee table. Yeah.
He didn't get bit. He was like afraid to get bit, and he put his foot through a glass table and went on the sample list.
By the way, since we're on the ridiculous little trivia there, you want to go with some trivia?
Oh, yeah. We forgot about trivia. Sure.
Well,
go ahead.
It's timely because we just mentioned the MLB draft, and this one is a little about that. So trivia that I think you'll know.
All right. We like that.
All right. So because we mentioned the MLB draft, 21 players in history were selected in the MLB draft and then bypassed the minor leagues before reaching the majors. And it's an interesting list. It's got two pitchers who threw no-hitters, a pitcher who appeared for 12 different teams, a hitter who had a four-homer game, and a hitter whose trade spawned a new rule regarding draftees. But here's your trivia question. I want you to name the only active player who went straight from the MLB draft to the majors. And I want you to name the one Hall of Famer who went straight to the majors from the draft.
You asked like 18 questions there.
Two questions.
I know the Hall of Famer.
And the Hall of Famer.
I mean, Mike Morgan's the guy for 12 teams, right?
Correct.
And
the no-hitters are Bert Hooten and Jim Abbott. The hitter is Bob Horner.
Horner, I knew.
The other hitter is
Mike Leake is active, right?
That is correct on the active player, right. Mike Leake.
Dave Winfield is the Hall of Famer.
And Dave Winfield is the Hall of Famer.
Where's David Clyde in all this?
Yeah. I almost put him on there as the only 18-year-old, I think, in the drafty era. Name the hitter who had the rule named after him. The trade rule.
Oh, Pete Incaviglia.
Nice job. Pete Incaviglia is the hitter. Yep.
So Mike Leake would have been the last guy then, probably.
He's the most recent, yeah. Do you remember who was the one before him? 2000s?
John Olerud? No, there's one between Olerud and Mike Leake, huh?
Yep. He played for the Yankees briefly.
Of course he did.
He had two Tommy John surgeries.
Jeez.
And he was a hitter.
A hitter with two...
Boy, I'm drawing a blank on that one.
I'm drawing a blank on that one, too.
The X-Men.
That doesn't help.
Oh, it should. That was his nickname.
Oh, Xavier Nady.
Xavier Nady.
Wow. Oh, that's right. Wow. Xavier Nady had Tommy John twice. Yeah. I do remember that. You know, Mike Leake, I mean, there were a couple pitchers, mainly lefties, like that kid from the Angels at number 10, who, yep. Like, that's a Mike Leake type. He's not going to have a lot of strikeouts, read something, but he's going to make the majors. Yeah, he's going to make the majors pretty soon. Like, do you think we're going to see anybody from the just drafted class go right to the major leagues? Reed Detmers could, I suppose. The Angels don't exactly have, you know, a ton of rotation depth. If Detmers is one of their five best starting pitchers and you see Mike Trout, you know, holding up his birth certificate, why not put him in the majors?
Yeah, I did an article actually picking one guy from each team quickest to the majors, and I listed a few who could make it this year. We might see some pitchers, you know, guys who are starters long term but could pitch in the majors this year as relievers, like this kid the Marlins drafted, Max Meyer. Throws 100, his slider, everybody says is the best pitch in the draft. No doubt he could pitch in a big league bullpen right now. Now, the Marlins might, you know, given their situation, that's a little different. But you might see a few guys like that. Reed Detmers, for sure. There's the guy the White Sox drafted out of Tennessee, Garrett Crochet, big lefty. Again, they'll develop him as a starter. But he could be in their bullpen this year. Why not?
Yeah, I could completely see that. Why not give him a little bit of relief work or the like? By the way, Bobby Miller with the Dodgers, I mentioned on Thursday's show.
And I would say this, who has more saves for the 2021 Cubs, Craig Kimbrell or Burl Callaway? Caraway.
Yeah, Caraway will probably see him too.
What was I'm trying to remember, where were the specs on Kimbrell's contract?
It's a 3-year deal, and he's in year two now, right? So,
yeah, like he's definitely.
Or is it might be two and an option. I don't think it's two and an option. I think it was a 3-year straight deal. So he's there next year.
So when I was watching the draft, Kyle Peterson, the excellent ESPN college baseball analyst, he dropped a Billy Wagner comp.
Yeah.
On Caraway, which was like, wow.
Well, short lefty who throws 100, that's what you think of. Billy Wagner should be in the Hall of Fame, by the way. I think I would like to see that.
I would too.
Today's actually the anniversary of one of the awesome baseball feats ever, the Johnny Vandermeer second no-hitter, right? Okay. I think I saw that. I saw that on Twitter, so it must be true. And I neglected on last Thursday's show to talk about one of my favorite memories as a child, the Von Hayes game, where he hit two home runs in the first inning against the hated Mets. And I tried to get, like, Mark Simon – our friend who used to work at ESPN to you know, talk about this with me on Twitter. He wasn't into it because he's a Mets fan. But, yes, Von Hayes was like the leadoff hitter for the Phillies that day. My favorite growing up, other than Schmidt. But I miss most of Schmidt's era. And 26-7 was the final score of that game, I believe.
How could you not mention that? You've mentioned Von Hayes like every podcast I listen to.
I'm bringing up Von Hayes. Isn't it interesting?
Trivia with Von Hayes just for him.
He was Ruben Amaro was once traded for Von Hayes. He was in that trade.
Yeah.
Not the 5-for-1 when the Phillies dumped him back on the Angels. Yep. Ruben Amaro came to Philly, then became the general manager, and then ruined the dynasty after that. But our favorite players are first baseman Von Hayes, who really was a corner outfielder, and yours is Alvin Davis, Dave, and Tristan's, of course, is Don Mattingly. So mullet and all. All right, well, we've done a lot on this show. Let's bring in Kyle now and do the hash browns. And Dave, you're just going to stick around because you have nothing else, just like we do, to do. What's going on? I mean, the sim deadline, by the way, is today. But all three of us have gotten our games in, and we are three of the four playoff teams right now. Although Tristan had a bad period, so he may not make it.
Man, but I had nothing but one run losses. Liam Hendricks blew a game in spectacular fashion. Oh, Sim, it breaks my heart so often.
It does. Kyle, what do you got today? What are the Twitter users want to hear?
Yeah, you guys touched on Wander Franco, among other prospects. John wants to know if we see Franco in whatever we get of a 2020 season.
Now, Dave, you said early on we would not see Franco. I think he's only 20 years old. But if he's the best option for the Rays at third base, I projected in an article, I don't know, months ago, that since they have a good shortstop, but they have nothing at third base, that Franco is going to be their third baseman this season. And I still think, like, Tampa Bay can win the World Series. It's going to count. Why wouldn't they push Franco if he's one of their best options? The money is not, like, is not relevant right now to them.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that's a big jump from, you know, he didn't play Double A last year, right? So that's a jump from A ball all the way to the major. Bryce Harper did it. I know in spring training they were trying Nate Lowe at third base. They got the Japanese guy. I forget his name, although I think that's a bit of a stretch.
Sugo.
Yeah, you should take Sugo.
I'm missing somebody at third base.
Yandy Diaz.
Yandy Diaz is not really a third baseman either. I don't know. I'm just saying if he's one of your best players right now, and Tampa doesn't debut him in August, but if Tampa Bay is winning the AL East on September 5th, you know, there's going to be new rules on how you can promote players,
right?
When the trade deadline is going to be, who is eligible for the playoffs. I mean, you're going to be able to have like 30 players on your playoff roster anyway. Why wouldn't Wander Franco be one of them? Anyway, Tristan, we don't rank him well for this season for fantasy. Obviously, in our dynasty ranks, he's got to be in your top 20, I assume. I didn't look at let me look.
Not that high. He's not that high in the – but he was fairly – generally ranked, I'll get the exact number, 48.
All right. The point is,
I'll ask you guys this though. For a prospect like Franco, we were talking about the hitters. If there's no instruction league or Arizona Fall League or winter leagues or the like, does it really suit prospects like this to just entirely miss a year of development? I don't know that players can just drop a prospect out of nowhere into a playoff race. Do they put all these prospects on the taxi squad that they're talking about?
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. My thinking overall is, you know, Detroit could put Mize and Manning in the rotation, and maybe they could contend right now because Mize and Manning might be their top two starting pitchers. Or, you know, they have Boyd. But the point is, if Detroit's a 500 team on September 1st, why wouldn't they take that chance? There's no asterisk. I'm not saying Detroit's going to win the World Series. I'm just saying every team has more of a shot now.
Yeah.
And look, Twitter is on fire in a bad way. Would you rather have no season or would you rather have a 50-game season? And I would like to say to my friends in the industry and that I work with, a 50-game season is better than no season, unequivocally, I think. And I think you agree with that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, but yeah, the strategies are going to be fascinating. Yeah, maybe Franco plays. I'm with you. If I'm the Tigers, like all three of those pitchers. Who's the third one? Scooball. You know, they all pitched in Double A. Scooball actually had the best numbers. Mm-hmm. They can all pitch in the majors now and not embarrass themselves. Why not give them, you know, 7 or 8 starts to get them ready for next year?
One of the major changes over the next couple of years, obviously the draft is never going to be 40 rounds again. Maybe it's 20. But you're going to see players moved to the majors a lot quicker now if partly because of financial reasons, but partly because they don't need to sit in the minors for 3 years, a lot of these guys. These college hitters and pitchers are – Mackenzie Gore could have pitched in the major leagues last year. I'm positive of this.
The service time question is going to be a big one, is how do they deal with that this year? And actually what I'm thinking of it just now is – if there's something done that this is not a full year's service, do teams then return these guys to the minors in a subsequent year to try and use that time to buy out another year?
Ugh, enough of this already.
I could see that happening.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, everybody wants to save money. It's just that's bad for the game, too. When Chris Bryant spends the first 2 weeks of his pro career in the minors and when he's ready, that's just bad.
You remember what I said on Thursday, Eric, and you said that calling 50 games the nuclear option is kind of stretching it, that zero is that. I remain pretty strong on it's bad. It's great for us as baseball fans. We want baseball, but this is going to be an ugly year and a half. I fear that.
I fear the next Twitter question. What is it, Kyle?
We got an interesting one. Just came in from Michael. He wants to know if you'd consider starting the playoffs in a fantasy league from day one and eliminate teams kind of as we go throughout the season here, as opposed to having whatever you would call a fantasy regular season for a month and a half.
Man, in a head-to-head league, I mean, it kind of stinks like to not even play at all. Like
50 games is what? 50 games, if they give off days, at best it's going to be 8 to 9 weeks. Probably 9 weeks.
So you play a six-week season in head-to-head, and then the top two teams play in the playoffs.
You can't do that.
Why can't you do that? It's better than nothing.
How are you going to – you're definitively going to have ties in the standings. Definitive.
So make 9 categories instead of 10. That's another way in head-to-head leagues to alter this or to count ties. I don't know. I mean –
oh, you're doing most categories. Okay, I see.
I mean, you could do that, but like I have a league that's 9 categories and yeah, there's still some ties, but like you've got to play some regular season to get to the playoffs. And I understand why the owners want more playoff teams. They all want to make more money. Who doesn't? Okay. But in fantasy, you have to have some regular season to get to the playoffs, Dave. You can't just like nobody just wants to like skip to the playoffs and then that's it. Like playoffs aren't 8 weeks.
My colleague Sam Miller wrote a piece for ESPN, I think last year, where you guys will have to find this article, but he proposed some kind of ongoing in-season playoff system for Major League Baseball, kind of like how English soccer has like the FA Cup. I know they don't call it the FA Cup anymore, but like an in-season tournament to get teams. It's like a sort of a mini playoff system to get some teams into the playoffs. That has nothing to do with your question. Just not but
by the way, the Premier League starts Wednesday.
I mean, yeah, fantasy, you know, head. I don't really play head to head, but yeah, you need like, yeah, 6 weeks is fine. It is. What can you do? It's the way
I'll say this. If your league can switch from roto to points for the 50 game season, I think that's a big deal, because in roto leagues, yeah, all 12 teams could end up with a total of 100 home runs. You're not giving it enough time to space it out. But in a points league, yeah. If I lose by 5 points, even in a 50-game season, I'm okay with that, just like I'm okay with that over 6 months.
Yeah, I'm just concerned.
That's more realistic.
As the head-to-head each matchup is one win is the one that I think doesn't work here. But you're right about the most categories. If it's a points league, then I could go for that.
All right, Kyle, what's next?
Well, just to kind of piggyback on that, you guys have all had pessimism when it comes to playing in a league like this. Would you try to play as normal this year with the winner getting like first choice of pick next year, as opposed to a financial reward or calling it a win? Like if you want to earn your spot for next year, as opposed to playing it out as a normal season?
I would love to play in a fantasy league that had relegation, like the Premier League. I think that would be fantastic. When I said that I didn't want to play for money, I really mean I want to play for less money, like a third of the money. There should be some money, but I would probably just take the money and give it to charity. Like, that's what I would tell people to do. If you're going to play for money this year, just donate the winnings to some charity in your local neighborhood, or whether it's to, you know, what's going on right now, you know, which we can't really talk about on this show. I don't know. You mean you're saying to choose your draft pick for next year, or
your draft order? Yeah. See, like they have some sort of different rewarding system.
Kyle, the problem with that idea is that if we're going to discount the value of a championship this year because it's a short season, doesn't the same argument apply that should something, some success from this year not have an impact on next year, which is a usual 162?
Yeah,
that's a good idea. Yeah, I mean, I'm all for this season counting just because I have a long time league that I never win, and this gives me a better chance to win. So I'm okay with that. But yeah, no asterisks.
Right, and Chris, like, do you guys remember what happened in '94? Tristan, you're old. You were playing fantasy then. We still gave somebody won the league in '94. We may not have had like a head to head playoffs, but I in my oldest league. Somebody won that year in 94. Yeah. I don't remember if it was me or someone else, but we may not have been able to do a playoff system. But like, that's the other thing about this 50-game season. It's going to start probably August 10th or 1st or something. Hopefully they get to finish. And then, yeah. You know, because that would be worse if you're playing only for 3 weeks and then it just ends. I guess it would remove liability for all the arguing that's been happening to, you know, between the two sides. But I just don't care. I don't want to hear it anymore. I understand, like, yes, I'm checking out Twitter, and Jeff Passan's doing a great job, but I just don't care. I'm numb. I'm numb to all this arguing back and forth. Just, look, if this was a marriage, they'd get a divorce. They can't get a divorce. They can't find new owners. They can't find new players. But just play. Just play already. Like Tony Clark said, just when and where, I'll show up. And when and where for me, I'll turn on the TV, and I'll watch my Phillies and every other team. That's what I want at this point. Anyway, and for fantasy, too.
But
fantasy and sim has to happen this year.
So we get the season, please, everybody, just from a non-baseball perspective, even continue to be smart, continue to do your social distancing, wear the masks, please follow the guidelines. We want that full season to get in here no matter how short it is.
They're risking it. The southern states are risking all sports by their behavior. I don't think I'm breaking any news there. Okay, let's keep my job. Next.
We got two more quick questions before we get out of here. Zach wants to know, if we don't play in 2020, would you have guys like Mondesi and Judge ranked higher in March 2021 than you did in March 2020?
No, because they didn't take some magic potion to make them durable. You know what? That's really – that McGuire, the only thing McGuire, to turn our show back to where it began, the only McGuire cop to is that DeAndre made him durable, so he avoided injuries. And then, of course, like 3 years later, he couldn't avoid them because he stopped taking it. But Mondesi and Judge and Stanton and I guess now Chris Sale, if you're not durable before, you're not going to be durable after just by skipping a season. Maybe you guys feel differently. Dave, what's your stance on this?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, is there something to the wear and tear and your body gets to recover for a whole year? Well, I'm pretty sure, you know, Stanton is still out there working out and lifting weights and all that. So it's not like he's just sitting on his couch eating Doritos. I think the biggest concern for a guy like Mondesi is we would have learned a lot this year. Was he going to get better? You know, was he going to improve that strikeout to walk ratio? So that just remains an unanswered question for a player like that.
I took over a sim team with Mondesi on it. I don't know what this manager was doing with the sim team. And everybody in the league is like, oh, what's he going to do next season? They have contracts. I'm dumping the whole team. I have Mondesi, Malik Smith, and D. Gordon on this team. I'm like, what simulation team would want these guys on the team? So not to bury the lead in that league, but yeah, I'm dumping them all. Tristan, any thoughts on this? I mean, you're a Yankees fan. I view Aaron Judge in a dynasty league as really dangerous. If I had him, I would trade him away as fast as I could. I did. I traded him to you for Bryce Harper because I think Harper will be healthy at least. Yeah. Your thoughts?
And then he tore me apart in our Sim series. That was great.
You deserve that.
Yes. Oh, I deserve that, mister. I make the playoffs every year. Oh, the curse of that Sim league on me. Why did I move to Yankee Stadium? Anyway, I'm off topic. Judge, the only reason I'd feel better about him is just that he should be healthy from day one of spring training, and he wasn't this year, and that's the only change for me. I did move him down in my Dynasty 300, and I put that at the beginning of the story. It's in the lead that he was one of the guys who I've changed my opinion on, and I've moved down just because of the injury question. It's a valid one, and we've discussed it quite a bit this year.
You have Wander Franco ahead of Aaron Judge. That's very interesting.
Wouldn't you?
I would, too.
Would anyone here take Judge over Wander Franco at this point in a Dynasty League starting?
Judge ain't 22. He's like 27 now, right?
I think he's 28.
Yeah, he's not as young as people think.
That's anyway. I don't know. I might take Judge.
Whoa. Oh, come on.
What? So Franco, I saw him in spring training. He's not a big dude. And I know there's guys like Altuve and Bregman who hit home runs without, you know, being 6'3 and 220 pounds. I'm not sure what Franco's ultimate upside is in the home run category. He might be a 30 home run guy, he might be 18. Maybe he's Alex Bregman and he hits 41. That would be my only concern with him.
He might be A-Rod, you know.
He might hit 350 with 45 home runs. Who knows?
All right, let's finish this up. Kyle, final question.
Last one comes from Jeremy. He wants to know if Eric's cookie discipline is maintained through all the quarantine.
Yes!
There it is.
With visual evidence that this would appear to be about 2 weeks progress on half a cookie.
That's more than a third. I'm sorry. You're eating more than you used
to. That's multiple servings.
I bought this cookie on Friday.
This was at the beginning of quarantine, Tristan.
I am still abiding. I'm at my lowest weight in 20 years, people. I'm down to 150. Me and a couple guys from the softball team threw the other day. We are ready to play. I've been running every day. I know, Dave, you run a lot. Tristan, are you running? Are you walking?
Walking, yeah. Doing a lot of
lengthy.
So, Eric, you got like your 1970s baseball build going on here.
I am Larry Boa. I am Rudy Maioli. Yeah, skinny little shortstops, except I'm playing left field. Unbelievably, our season might start 3 weeks from yesterday. I can't believe that, but I'm excited to get it started. If it's safe. In the Northeast, it's not like it is right now in Florida or Arizona, but anyway, we hope things work out. I mean, look, there's a lot of stuff going on in this country, a lot more important than baseball, and some of you on Twitter are letting me know that, and I'll just tell you, look, it's my job to host the Fantasy Baseball Podcast and to write about fantasy sports. So when I'm told to do it, I'm going to do it, but it doesn't mean I'm not paying attention to what is happening in the world. I am, as is Dave, as is Tristan, as is Kyle. We understand that. And we hope that things start to get better. And ESPN's doing a great job with diversity. And they're putting on, panels that we've been watching. And look, I'll just say we hope things will get better. Anyway, that is all for today's show. Check out Dave Schoenfield's fine work at ESPN's MLB coverage. He has a piece up today, which recapped the awesome 30 for 30 doc, Long Gone Summer. And Dave, I don't know if you even have an answer to this, but what are you working on now? Are we just waiting for some clarity from the commissioner on what's going to happen, or do you have other projects you're working on?
I think my next piece actually will be what is next for Spencer Torkelson. So yeah, I'll write on that. Got to do a little research on that whole first to third transition to see what are the odds that it'll actually be successful.
Not everybody agreed with me that the more valuable fantasy option will be Austin Martin over Torkelson. And I don't even care what positions they play. Martin could be third base. He could be center field. He could be short or second. Kevin Biggio is not a Hall of Famer. He can move from second base to left field. So Toronto could do a lot of things there. And with Torkelson, I don't care what position he plays for fantasy. I just want him to hit and hit soon. But Tristan, you have Martin a little bit ahead of Torkelson. So check out Tristan's dynasty rankings. They are posted at ESPN Fantasy, and they are spectacular. And maybe on a future show, if we have time, I will talk about what I think is very interesting about them. Fernando Tatis at number 10. Man, that durability scares me great. If you've got Judge at 50, Tatis at 10 is very interesting. So
edge difference comes into play there. We can get into that in a future show.
I'm not ripping you. I'm just saying, like, I'm not sure I could do that. That's all for today's show. On Thursday, June Lee will join us as we break down his favorite baseball movie, not to give away the plot, but Moneyball will be the topic on Thursday, and we're going to force Dave to come back next Monday. That's all for today. Thanks so much to Dave Schoenfield, Tristan H. Cockcroft, Kyle Soppy, Ken Griffey Jr., Steve Traxel, and the whole gang. I am merely Eric Carabel. Have an awesome week.